Welcome to the UBS studio in New York City for another episode of Through the Wealth Lens. We often hear the word wealth in our business. After all, we are in wealth management. But what does wealth actually mean? In today's day and age, the definition of wealth is constantly evolving and changes depending on who you ask. With this constantly shifting concept of wealth, what do we mean when we refer to invisible wealth? Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming on Jennifer Wines, author of Invisible Wealth, Five Principles for Redefining Personal Wealth in the New Paradigm. A former private client advisor in the wealth management industry, through thousands of client conversations, Jennifer noticed something. People are increasingly interested in wealth beyond the dollar. Inspired by the shift, Jennifer stepped away from the wealth management advisor seat in 2022 to research the axioms of wealth through a future forward lens. It was through this exploration that she wrote the book, Invisible Wealth, which offers a timely yet timeless redefinition of wealth. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here with you both.
So Jennifer, to kick off our conversation today, what inspired you to write the book, Invisible Wealth?
It's a great question, and you were so generous with your introduction in describing a little bit about exactly that. So you're right. I mean, I was in the wealth management advisor seat, and it was through thousands of client conversations that I started to notice that mindsets were shifting and that people were wanting to revisit and redefine wealth in a more holistic way, in a more multidimensional way. And I became totally fascinated with this mindset shift. And it became omnipresent for me, so much that I started to see it everywhere. You know, sometimes when you fixate on one thing, you start to see it everywhere. And that's what happened to me with the concept of redefining wealth, so much so that I became a little bit, you know, obsessed with it, oddly so, and decided to step away, as you mentioned, from the advisor seat in April of 22, so nearly 4 years ago. And I did that so that I could fully dedicate myself to researching, like, what is the future of wealth? What does the next generation of wealth look like? And through this exploration, I did do a lot of research about the axioms of wealth. So said differently, the fundamentals, right? The foundational universal kind of concepts as it relates to wealth, but also thinking about how those fundamentals interplay with all the technological advancements and societal shifts that are underway, because so much is changing right now, and so too is our concept and definition of wealth. So through this exploration, I ended up writing the book titled Invisible Wealth, which came out nearly 3 years ago in May of 2023. And it's incredible to think that the book came out 3 years ago, because it seems like just yesterday, but at the same time, the book is like sort of old news. But the concept and conversation about redefining wealth absolutely isn't. In fact, it feels like it's just getting started, which is really exciting.
So I have to ask you, what is invisible wealth?
Great question. And naturally, this is a question I love to answer. And if I so may ask, I'm going to take a couple minutes just to share what invisible wealth is, because it's going to provide a really good foundation for us to build upon. So if we're going to think about what is invisible wealth, I want to break the question down into its most fundamental parts, right? Taking a first principles approach to the question, meaning that I want to think about what is wealth before getting to what is invisible wealth. So first things first, what is wealth? Well, if we take a look back, we'll see that the word wealth came into our lexicon mid-13th century from England. And it was born from the root word well or weal, meaning health and well-being. So wealth found its definitional roots in health and well-being, and it really embodied like this essence of happiness. But what happened is that over time, wealth became synonymous with an abundance of money and material possessions. And there are absolutely evolutionary reasons for this, largely due to the increased sophistication of money and the increased sophistication of economies over time. So as money evolved and economies evolved, so too did our concept and definition of wealth, right? Basically thinking, when you say wealth, you think money. They're one and the same. But the thing is that that words can change over time. And during their evolution, a word might become more expansive over time, and that's what's happening with the word wealth right now, or more narrow over time, or change a meaning entirely. It really depends upon what's going on within its environment, because words, just like people, just like you and me, and just like you and me, Max, are often a product of their environment, or at least influenced by their environment. And that's exactly why it's time for us to revisit and redefine wealth, with consideration for all of these technological advancements and societal shifts that are underway, which are kind of creating this new world that's coming online for us, and more specifically, this new wealth paradigm, as I often refer to it as, because what's happening is that these advancements and shifts are bringing in this new paradigm, inviting us to revisit what we value. Now, here's the thing. When we revisit value, we inherently revisit wealth because we're wealthy when we have an abundance of what we value. With that said, the question then becomes, well, what do you value and why? In these days, based upon research, based upon observations, people are valuing the intangible or the invisible assets of life more so or equally to the visible and intangible assets of life. So invisible wealth is basically an invitation for us to think about wealth beyond money and to think about wealth more dynamically and think about it more multidimensionally with consideration for these intangible or invisible assets, hence the title of the book, Invisible Wealth. So simply put, I'll give you one tagline. Invisible wealth is a concept for redefining wealth.
Brilliant.
And Jennifer, throughout the book, you discuss the five principles of invisible wealth. Can you walk us through them and how they came to represent invisible wealth?
With pleasure. So as just mentioned, invisible wealth is a concept for redefining wealth, although admittedly, this is a big abstract concept, right? How can we practically apply this thinking to our lives? Because I think many would agree that wealth is more than money, but how can we take this thinking and apply it practically to our lives? And that's exactly why I created the five principles of invisible wealth. In this framework, what it does is it provides us with the infrastructure to embrace a more holistic or multidimensional interpretation of the word, right? And each of the five principles, what they do is they provide groups of assets that we go through life wanting to attain more of, albeit perhaps at different points and times in our lives. So with that, I'll go ahead and walk through the five principles with you so that people have a sense for what I'm talking about here. But the five principles start off with the first principle, which is money and investment, as you might imagine. The second is health and quality of life. The third is knowledge, status, influence. The fourth is time, energy, and experiences. And the fifth, last but not least, is relationship with self and others. So when we take a look at these five principles, right, these groups of assets, we'll see that we go through life wanting to attain, maintain, or optimize all of these assets at different points in time. And I'll also point out that the five principles are emblematic of this new wealth paradigm that's emerging. Because when we take a look at the antiquated narrow interpretation of wealth, it only took into consideration the first principle, money. Whereas the modern expansive definition of wealth takes into consideration each of the five principles, right? All of these assets. And when we look at these principles, when we look at these assets, I imagine that we each agree, both collectively, objectively, that these assets are all inherently valuable to the human experience. And for that reason, I decided to include all of these assets within the five principle framework. And that's a little bit about the genesis of the five principles and the thinking behind them.
And now that we've established what invisible wealth is and the principles that represent it, let's frame it in a way that any person can relate to. How can someone start to practically apply this framework to their own life? Where do they begin?
So that's a great question. How can we practically apply this thinking to our lives? I think it's a really good next step for us to take in this conversation. So as we now know, invisible wealth is a concept for redefining wealth, right? And we want to think about wealth beyond money. But again, how can we practically apply this thinking to our lives? And that's, again, why I created the five principles of invisible wealth. Now, what we can do is think about which of the five principles we value most at this point in time in our lives, because after all, we're wealthy when we have an abundance of what we value, right? So you want to consider the five principle framework. And now here's the thing with frameworks. Frameworks are, by design and by definition, able to help us to structure and organize our thinking through abstract questions and concepts such as invisible wealth, such as what do you value most and why. And for this reason, we can leverage, right, to use a financial term here, we can leverage the five principles to take a look and consider which asset, or said differently, which aspect of life we're valuing at this point in time, and consider why. So that's where the five principle framework comes into play. Now, someone might say to themselves, well, that's actually quite rudimentary, right? We're just going to look at these five principles and think which is the most valuable to us. And the answer is yes, it's actually quite powerful to take a look and see, again, which assets or aspects of life we're prioritizing. Now, why is this important? It's important because it helps us to orient ourselves in the right direction. It helps to inform where we're placing our attention, right? Where we're placing our sustained attention, and also with intentionality, so that we can ultimately unlock a rich life, right, that perhaps wouldn't be accessible or available if we didn't approach things with this intentionality. So here's the thing. If you focus on attaining, maintaining, and optimizing assets that aren't truly valuable, then you won't be truly wealthy. Now, the inverse is true, right? If you focus on attaining, maintaining, and optimizing assets that you do truly value, or maybe I just said it in the reverse, you do truly value, then you will be wealthy. So that's why we want to have a think through what assets we're optimizing for in life and why, because it's critically important to the richness of our lives.
Thank you for that real life application, Jennifer. Within the book, you use the phrase define your wealth throughout. What do you mean by this, and why does it matter?
That's a great question. So to bridge from our previous question to this one, what I'll do is I'll just share a couple of examples with you, right? For a really practical application to bring this abstraction into action and to really concretize these ideas thus far. Because again, we're playing with a lot of abstraction here. So, for example, throughout life, there might be times where you prioritize different things. So in your 20s, maybe you valued knowledge, so you pursued college. Maybe in your 30s, you valued relationships, so you pursued marriage. Maybe in your 40s, you valued health, right? So you pursued longevity. So this shows us that the wealth conversation and wealth in and of itself is quite subjective, and it's subject to change over the course of life, right? But what's interesting is that these examples are undergoing revision at the moment, because so many people are revisiting and reevaluating what they value in life and why. So we're kind of restructuring the shape and form of life these days relative to times past. And for me, that's why I think this world, right, and I'm sure you both would agree, the wealth world and wealth management more specifically is so fascinating, because people's lives are changing every day, every month, every year. And the way that they think about the different assets and aspects of their life is constantly evolving. So those are some practical examples, right, just again to ground this in a little bit of reality. But when we talk about defining your wealth, this is what makes this so powerful. Because we want to understand how we're defining our own concept of wealth in our lives at this point in time. We want to ensure that we're approaching wealth through our own complex matrix of being, right? Through our own perspectives, our own experiences, our own circumstances, rather than adopting or embracing other people's definitions of wealth that people are embracing around them. Because it's easy, we're human, right? And humans oftentimes pursue the path of least resistance. We tend to default to the default narratives. And the default narrative for so long has been that you're wealthy when you have lots of money. And for that reason, many people have focused on acquiring money. They focus on attaining, maintaining, and optimizing for money. Now, that's great and all, so long as that's an authentic representation of what you truly value, right? But when you strip it all away, the societal constructs, the societal conditioning, is that truly what you want to be prioritizing at a point in time in your life? And I think that this is where the concept of define your wealth comes into play, because it invites people to get a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more intentional about how they're organizing themselves in their lives. So for example, Max, let's say, or rather a question for you, let's say that we're both wanting to optimize for the same asset. So right now in your life, you know, you have a great career, you have a great family, all the rest. I mean, let's say that you're optimizing for money right now, right? Can we just use that for sake of conversation?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, great. So you are optimizing for money right now, and let's assume I'm optimizing for money as well. Great. we're in this game of life both optimizing for money. We're both playing the money game. Now, one additional layer to fold in here, one additional dimension, let's say, to fold in here, is that the way that you play this game, the money game, and I play the money game is going to be different. The ways and whys of how you attain, maintain, and optimize money is going to be different than me, because we're each going to approach this game through our own complex matrix of being. We're each going to approach this game, to go with a pun here, or the visual, we're both on the court playing a game from a different perspective. So we both see the game differently. So while two people might be wanting to optimize for the same thing, it's also worth mentioning that the ways and whys of how we approach that is going to be different. And again, that's what makes this conversation about wealth so fascinating, because the way that we think about wealth, the way that we approach wealth, is different for each person for different reasons and changes throughout the course of life.
Right, and it doesn't necessarily mean that either approach is wrong, right? There's just different methods, different ways going to go about it based on who that individual is.
Exactly. And that individual, they might change over the course of life, as mentioned. So if they pass go and collect $200, are they going to be happy? If I say, here, Max, here's $200, you might say, great, thanks, and be happy today. But maybe 5 years from now, I go to hand you that same $200, and it's not as satisfying, right? Because things change. And maybe you wish that you were playing for something different, some different asset or aspect of your life. So again, it's just important to keep this in mind, because life is so precious, and we want to make sure that we're enhancing our most precious asset.
I think that's really interesting, because I think, you know, if you have two people essentially on the same page and pursuing the same goal, in this particular example of wealth, they could still be interacting in a way that's not really congruent, right? Because they have a different approach to how they're, you know, how they're pursuing that that wealth. So that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And to expand on that, once someone has defined their wealth, how does that translate into the family dynamic, especially when different family members may define wealth differently?
Mm. So this is definitely another dimension, right, to fold into the conversation. So thank you for introducing this in. And as it turns out, we are all relational beings. And oftentimes relating starts and ends with our family. And so if we embrace the notion that wealth is dynamic, right, and changes throughout life, and that we each approach wealth through our own complex matrix of being, that we each approach wealth differently, then what does this mean for the family system, right, the family unit and family dynamics? And this is where things get interesting. And in my estimation and my belief is that this is actually quite powerful and productive. Now, here's why. Because personal clarity supports family cohesion. Right, so if you are clear on what you value and why, if you are clear on what you want to attain, maintain, and optimize, then you can easily communicate that reality to others. You can easily communicate that reality with intentionality. And that's a benefit for you and for the others around you. We can also think of it this way. A family, is comprised of the sum of its parts, right? The sum of its people. And each part or each person thinks about wealth differently. And as a consequence, they might have a different sense of identity, right? Their shape or form is different relative to others. Now, when someone truly understands their shape and form, when they truly understand themselves and their identity, then it's easier for these parts, if you will, to interconnect in a really elegant way, to fortify one another, because you're able to figure out how they best complement one another. And so that's where I think the real power comes into play, with personal clarity, thereby unlocking or at least providing the opportunity for family cohesion, and unlocking the door to harmonious family dynamics, which is critically important within this space. So yes, defining your wealth is important and productive for you as the individual, but it's also quite productive for the family unit, family system, and for family dynamics.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. Jennifer, to round out our conversation today, you focus a lot on the power of words in your work. Why does language matter so much for families who want to create a meaningful legacy that will endure across generations?
It's an astute observation, Max, and you're absolutely right. For whatever reason, I have this affinity or this, you know, really adoration for words. And that might be obvious by now that you know that you're talking to a girl who's written a book on redefining the word wealth. So with that, I've spent a lot of time thinking about the power of words and how they power our lives. And I often say that words architect our lives because we can expand or contract our reality by virtue of the words that we use. And we can think of it this way. So words function as building blocks. They allow us to build and architect conversations. And through these conversations and dialogue with self or with others, we're then able to design the future. We're able to design our legacy. And also one thing worth noting here is that the power of words is, in effect, the golden thread that's woven throughout the conversation here, because we've talked about redefining the word wealth. We've talked about defining wealth for yourself. And then, of course, how conversation with self and others can unlock clarity and cohesion, which is critically important, right? So ultimately, words are, in language, is what allows us to communicate this abstraction, right, and to articulate it in a meaningful way so that we can then create a harmonious relationship with self and also with others for generations to come. Because ultimately, words outlive, they architect, right, the future, that outlive the builder. And in my mind, there's no better use case for the power of words within this context, at the very least.
Really appreciate that answer. Jennifer, we're thrilled that you were able to be on today with us discussing invisible wealth and its message for our audience. For those of you who would like to explore Jennifer's concept of invisible wealth further, feel free to check it out on LinkedIn or at jenniferwines.com. Until next time, thank you for joining us for another episode of Through the Wealth Lens.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.